You're listening to Trope or Not to Trope, where your hosts, Kelly,
Kristen,
and Ray. Welcome to Trope or Not to Trope. I'm Ray, and this is our Love Triangles Part 2 episode. So if you haven't listened to Part 1, it'd be a good idea to go back and start there, where we discuss the basics of what a love triangle is, why it's such a popular trope, how the trope differs depending on the genders of the parties involved, and what happens when the triangle is actually bigger and more complicated than an actual triangle. Now, without further ado, let's get into Part 2.
Okay, so as we've mentioned, there are many potential problems with love triangles and love octagons and love conspiracy boards, especially when you stray from, like, the most tropiest of all of the execution. Like, you gotta stick with what works. But one of the biggest problems I see is when a writer spends a ton of time developing the love interests into real characters, and then, in an attempt to make the protagonist relatable to the audience, gives her only one character trait, which is the fact that two boys are in love with her. Or, you know, she might be clumsy too, because she's real. But, like, this is how you end up with fan fiction about the two suitors falling in love and leaving Mary Sue behind while they live happily ever after. So, like, what are some ways to avoid this when writing a love triangle? Like, how can you make your protagonist a real character while also still keeping her relatable and that solid audience insert that we all love?
I think the answer is that you have to lead with the main character. Like, what is her life and what does she need? If she's the primary focus, then the love interests are developed secondarily to her. And as for making her relatable, like, if she's a character that we basically like and she's behaving in ways that are consistent with her character, then I think people will buy it. Like, maybe you'll alienate some people who, like, don't quite relate to it, but, like, other people who really relate to it will, like, that'll be their jam. But, like, if she's the main character, it should be her story. It should be an arc about, like, her life. So, like Pride and Prejudice again. Like, Lizzie is the main character, and she's presented with multiple suitors. There is the safe but unattractive Mr. Collins, who is willing to marry her. He meets the basic requirements. But, you know, we have the, like, elusive and charming Mr. Wickham, like, until we learn that, like, he's a jerk. But until then, like, he's very charming, and it seems like we have, like, some potential there. And you have, like, the awkward Mr. Darcy, and, like, Lizzie is a confident, intelligent character, generally. She's, like, she's just as much of a character as the suitors that she's presented with, and I'd say she's still pretty relatable. But, like, it's her story. The focus wasn't to make as many attractive men as possible. It was to present, like, challenges in Lizzie's life.
Yes.
So, I think that's the difference. The focus is making a good story, not, like, if your focus is just on imagining as many interesting men as possible, then I suppose your story is about showcasing the sexy men. And
yes, please.
That's how you end up with, like,
here for it.
Main character who's, like, not much of a character. It's just, like, this is about sexy men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. I think that if you have a kind of, like, going off of that, because I agree. I think that, yeah, starting with your main character makes sense. Also, in my opinion, a lot of times I feel like a good love triangle, it really does come down to how relatable and interesting the main character is for me. So if she has a strong motivation or, like, fear about something, that should definitely be tapped into when she's exploring her options, I guess. Because then, I mean, like, we all as human beings have some form of motivation, some form of fear, or, like, we hide ourselves from the world, certain parts of it, or, like, we want to become certain people. And so exploring that using love triangles makes sense. And then going back to, like, the, when you're forming your main character, I feel like it's so interesting to me that whether it be character, whether it be setting, whether it be, you know, whatever, drawing from your own experience, like, even if it's something small, especially if it's something small, and using that to then, you know, build your character or build your world, I feel like it makes it seem 1,000 times more real than if you're just making all of it up and you have like flat, tropey, stereotypical type people. Like, mm-hmm. I do understand the purpose of main characters that are basically like a white wall where you can like project any person onto them because it's all about like wish fulfillment.
Yeah.
And I do get that, but I feel like as far as the story goes, it doesn't resonate with me as much. It's just kind of like a fun time. And then I don't have any like deep emotional connection to it as much. It's just like, oh, those people are hot. And that was fun. But
makes sense. I will say, like, it gets tricky starting to give your characters, like, your main character, starting to give her motivation, because you have to give her relatable enough motivation. The more specific you make your character, the more people you alienate. Mm-hmm. Like, at least in a romance book. Like, if you're writing something else and the love triangle is secondary, then, like, do whatever you want with your main character. But if your point is to, like, write a romance book where the reader can insert into the main character, then you have to be really careful with what traits you give her. Like, it has to be, like, body issues are great. Every woman has body issues. Like, you know, insecurity, any kind of, like, very broad, relatable, cliche motivation.
So I guess it's not so much a flaw, so much as like, what is the purpose of this story? Because like, you might want her to be like as blank and just a Mary Sue, like as much as possible, if your point was basically to like showcase like the love interests.
But still, I feel like it would be interesting if she, you know how, like going back, okay, so like touching on insecurities, just that deep-seated fear of something, whatever the fear, whatever fear you pick for your main character, or like, I feel like there needs to be something there, so that's not just flat. I mean, maybe that's just me, but I feel like whenever I read those romance books where it's just kind of like a Mary Sue character, I feel like it's not as powerful as like, for example, Pride and Prejudice, although maybe that's unfair of me to compare it to, but it just like, it's not timeless. It doesn't feel well-rounded. So like, at least for me, it just doesn't, again, it feels like a good time versus like, oh, it's a good friend that I'm going to revisit time and time again.
So maybe it's like more of an aspect, like it needs something grounding it more. Like if she has more of a, like a deep fear of some sort, like some really like, I don't know, classic tropey ones that you can give your main character is like, oh, she's like worried about her family for some reason. Like there's something going on with her family. Maybe like a family member is sick or in trouble. Or something like that. And she really cares about them. And she's like scared about what is going to happen to her family. And that like adds more weight to the story because she's experiencing this serious emotion. But it can still be very relatable because like everybody has a family. You generally care about like somebody who's not your romantic partner. Like,
I think it's does matter what the fear is. Like you can't just bank on fear being relatable. Like I think you do have to find those, like, yes, everyone is afraid for their families, yes, everyone is afraid their life isn't going anywhere, like, you know, those kinds of things,
right? Yeah.
Okay, so a lot of what we've been talking about falls under young adult or like coming of age stories, the more wholesome first love kinds of relationships. When this trope ventures into drama and literary fiction, it can get a little bit darker. Like, maybe the love interest is married and is torn between her husband and the pool boy. Or, like, maybe a man has to quietly get rid of his mistress when his wife gets suspicious.
Oh, no.
Like, you can sometimes see this kind of thing in YA if, like, the love interest already has a boyfriend and then meets the new kid. But it's a very different vibe. So, this question is twofold. First, how do you guys feel about the darker, more ethically gray love triangles? And second, whether darker or more cute and fun, like, how do you feel about love triangles that start with the protagonist already in a relationship? Like, are those better if they're written dark, better with levity? Like, let's talk about infidelity.
Well, if the question is whether or not I like the character that is in a relationship and is like cheating on their partner, no. Like, I don't like those characters where, I mean, obviously, I'm sure there are exceptions, but like, in the sense of they're in a relationship and they're blatantly lying and like, you know, going behind their partner's back, I think, like, it's going to take a lot for me to like that character again.
What if they break up and then date the person and realize they don't want to be with the person and try to get back with their original?
I think they should have learned something from, like, there's still, the problem is still like miscommunication, and it's still the sense of like, can you trust that person then again? And I guess it depends on the character, but I would have a bad taste in my mouth. I think I am, as far as the story goes, I actually think I like the darker stories more. Oh. Not the character. But I think I do like those glimpses into like the darker side of humanity, or like our failings, and like a look into that side of things. Like, if they're killing their partner to be with the person they're passionately now in love with, I guess I do want to see how it's played out, because I'm like, oh, that's dark and interesting. But if there's some kind of levity there, I actually get annoyed with that more, because because I don't know, it's not necessarily a glimpse into the different facets of humanity. I mean, it obviously can be, because it's a story and that's sort of kind of part of the point. But with the levity there, usually it's about the story of like, oh, I know this is wrong, but haha, it's kind of funny. And it definitely chafes with like my irritation with that character. It's usually more of a character. I don't know. Like, it's the tone, I think, that also upsets me.
So you like the dark ones because they like commit to everything you hate about love triangles?
Maybe, because I think it's more of like a look into that. It's not like I still don't like the character and I don't like their choices, but I feel like when it's presented, it maybe because of it's presented in such a way that's just so like far-fetched that maybe I'm able to distance myself. I don't know. Or like, I'm just watching, I'm like eating popcorn and watching like circus performances versus like, oh, this could actually happen. And like, you know, they're hurting people and like, it's still like light and fluffy. And I don't like those mixing.
Interesting. I'm like kind of on the same vibe, but I tend to like the darker ones because it like takes things to a logical conclusion. Like, it might be exaggerated, but it's like, oh yes, this is actually what would happen if this played out.
Yeah.
I'm like kind of on the other side of a lot of that. Like, I don't like, like, I'm kind of okay with dark, but like literary fiction or things that try to like cut like too close to like real life, I think those stories are like valuable and can be very like very good and things like that, but I tend to enjoy them less because they're usually like depressing and about like the parts of like life and humanity that like I'd rather not do. Like, it's not even like, oh, I want to like close my eyes and pretend that doesn't exist, but it's more like I don't want, like, if there's no reason for me to spend time there, then I don't want to spend time there. Like, if you have a depressing story about a housewife woman who's like, her husband is never home and like she's sleeping with the pool boy or whatever, and she like has this life that's like perfect on the surface, but like deeply unhappy. Like, you know, you could tell this pretty easily in the 50s, maybe. Like, mm-hmm. like that, like, and just kind of present that whole like how it's like, oh yeah, like it's a perfect face for everything, but everything is also like rotten and sad and like no one like loves her or like something like that. And it's just sort of like, oi. Did we have to, right? Find something else in your life to be like excited about or like something like that? Do we have to like wallow in how depressing this is?
Yeah, I find them interesting. Like, I have to be in the right mood. I don't usually like to read it. I will watch it because it's shorter. And like, I have to be in the right mood, and it like obviously has to be done well. But I think the dark ones can be fascinating.
Yeah.
Just because you don't know how it'll end.
Yeah.
Most love triangles, you can kind of guess how it's going to end. Uh-huh. But like, if they just kind of take a deep dive into the depressing, like, it could go any which way.
Also, I do want to like make a separation between like dark and like serious, I guess, ish. Or maybe it's not serious, but maybe it's like dramatic or things like that. Like, I'm still like, you have like Phantom of the Opera or something like that, and you have like scenes basically where you have like the Phantom and Raoul in like conflict with each other and things like that, and like you can argue that the Phantom of the Opera is like dramatic but like generally also like dark and serious and things like that. They're just like a bit like extreme and things like that, but I don't find that story like depressing because it's not like I don't know, frequently like the lit fic likes to like wallow in like how like mundane and like unremarkable and like it's not dramatic, it's just like quietly depressing and like nihilistic, and I'm just sort of like, no.
Okay. That's fair. I will say, on the topic of like the protagonist starting in a relationship, I tend to like those stories until the protagonist cheats. Like, that's the line I don't like being crossed. But it's a good obstacle to the relationship if she starts in or he starts in a relationship.
Yeah. I have varying amounts of sympathy for that. It depends on how it's done. Because, like, like, I don't know, hates her current partner or something, or he hates his current partner, and then they go and, like, they have a fling with, like, some attractive, like, stranger or something like that. It's like, I don't like that, but if it was more like they met, like, you know, they're in, like, a good, like, basically steady relationship, and then, like, maybe it's a little boring, maybe it's a little mundane, whatever, but then they meet someone who's, like, just, like, super hot and like seductive or something like that, and like they don't so much like choose to cheat as like they are like seduced, it's sort of like that sounds like
that kind of reminds me, oh my gosh, this is actually one of those exceptions I was talking about earlier. There's this, Kristen, did you ever see Bridgerton season 2?
I did. I watched it while I was sick. I binged the entire thing.
Okay. So this is very strange to me that I like this, but I think I understand. Anyway, so in season 2 of Bridgerton, slight spoilers, but you kind of like pick up on the fact very early on in the season. But the man who is in the middle of like this love triangle is Antony, and he's like basically like this player character, very duty driven, and he's like, okay, I actually need to marry now because I'm head of the family, whatever. And he meets these sisters, and like one of them is, you know, kind, a homemaker, like very sweet, and like everything that on paper he said he wants in a wife. And he starts courting her. Mm-hmm. And then, like, in the process, he ends up meeting her sister, which sounds very strange in a love triangle. I normally don't like this because I'm like, oh, that's weird. But how it's done is, like, her sister, her name is Kate, but, like, Antony is courting the person's name is Edwina, and like mm-hmm. Edwina has a sister named Kate.
Mm-hmm.
And Kate is one of those, it's like the rivals to lovers type deal where she challenges Antony and she like beats him at his own game and like she pushes him and they have awesome banter. And obviously Kate doesn't want to hurt her sister. So she pushes her feelings down for Antony, and Antony doesn't want to like, you know, sully his family's name. So he doesn't want to think about their feelings for each other. And the sexual tension is amazing. And so like, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but things happen. And I do like how they set up that. And it's one of those, like, he's definitely in some form of relationship, like historical kind of relationship. I guess they're kind of dating, kind of courting. But like he's promised himself to her. And obviously there are challenges with that because he then is like deeply attracted to Kate. And it's anyway, just okay. At least for me, I liked it.
That is interesting to me because I found it super annoying. Like, it would have been good if he wasn't such a moron from the outset. Like,
he is a moron.
All
yeah.
they had to do was talk to each other. Like, any subset of the three characters talking to each other would have solved most of the problems.
Wait,
and they didn't.
Kristen, isn't that like the problem with like 90% of romance books, though?
Yeah, I hate it every time. Like, this has nothing to do with love triangles, but my least favorite episodes of Friends are like always the most popular ones, like the one where they're trying to move the couch. Like, there's such an easy solution and nobody talks to each other and no one sees it, and I hate it because they're all idiots. Like, that happens in love triangles so much. They don't talk to each other, and they don't, it's not even that they don't recognize their own feelings, they do recognize their own feelings, and then they decide to be dumb about it. Like, if there is an easy solution, I hate the story because it just, I don't believe that the problem matters.
I mean, like, it's kind of the miscommunication is center stage for a lot of romance, but especially love triangles in general, because if the main character basically was true to themselves and then also had conversations with the other two characters, it would resolve. And I think like part of my problem with love triangles is there is this, I mean, obviously there's like the toxic traits that like follow love triangles, and it's like, oh yeah, that's bad. But then also just like the complete idiot that the main character can be, like going back to Antony, he's so dumb.
So like, dumb.
All he needs to do is just come out and say like, I have feelings for you. But that's not what happens, obviously, because they have to drag it out for a complete season. But like, and I do understand that, like, that is a problem and it does irritate me. But at the same time, there wouldn't be a story. So like, I am conflicted here.
If there's not a story without your main character being a moron, you need to write a better story.
But like, he is a moron. Like, his whole character thing is that he's a moron. So I, like, believed it. I was like, of course, like, he wouldn't.
There was one point in the series, which, granted, I watched this while I was sick and, like, kind of high on cold medicine. So, you know. But there was one point where they literally had an out. Like, all he had to do was talk to his fiance and be like, hey, I like your sister, and she would have bowed out, and like, feelings might have been hurt, but like, it would have been fine, and no one's reputation would have been ruined. And then he decides not to do that because he's dumb.
Because he's a dumb character. But I know exactly what moment you're talking about, and I do understand. I was deeply irritated. Yes, I agree.
Like, I was for it up until that point, but like at that point, I was just like, okay, I'm done with you.
Kristen's done. She's off the ship.
I can't handle dumb characters. I can't.
I think the only thing saving them after that, well, like, there are other things, but like they just had such chemistry too. I mean, that's the added benefit of, I guess, movies or TV shows. It's like, yeah, there are actors who have that supercharged.
They had great chemistry, and there was so little of them together on screen that it was annoying.
That's fair.
Right. Although, while we're on the topic, let's talk about siblings and love triangles. Oh, dear. Because those are weird, but they happen often. And I have actually seen them happen in real life, which is also weird.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You just mean...
It's weird.
Like, I normally don't like them. I don't know how,
why is it a thing? Like, it keeps happening.
Oh, it's weird.
It feels like a cop-out sometimes. Like, I don't know. Like, it feels like, oh, you just made that the case so that there would be drama. Or it's like, it feels like this, like, nod to, like, oh, this is the type of person that you're attracted to, but, like, because it makes the comparison that they're like, oh, they're similar enough people that they're kind of like interchangeable, like, is sometimes what it points to, even if they have drastically different like characteristics. I don't know.
It just are you talking about like physical traits?
Like, I don't know. Like, there's a reason that, like, when you see, I'm talking about Pride and Prejudice again, but like when you, like, Mr. Collins shows up and he's like, I'm here for like a wife, and I would like he basically has his eye on Jane or whatever, and like their mother, Mrs. Bennett, is like, well, Jane's soon to be engaged, but there's Lizzie, and like Collins just like takes that because he doesn't care like which girl he gets. It's just like
that's fair. It's also, it keeps you from having to introduce the love interests and make them into an actual triangle because they already know each other.
That's true. They're already all set up there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can play with like the drama that sometimes things like to have, like, oh, they're identical twins and there's a mix up. Like, I have mixed feelings about that because, yeah, that drama is there and ready for like you can totally have that.
That's too close to like assault for my taste. I recently read a book in which that was a thing. Like, the book opened because a girl had a crush on one twin, and then she ended up making out with the other twin, thinking that he was his twin, and he didn't correct her, and it was all sorts of cringy.
Great. No.
Yeah. Plus, there's always sibling rivalry. That's a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I feel like it's, like, more often when they're siblings, they're highlighting, like, some of, like, the worst parts of, like, people. Like, because, like, it's, like, emphasizing the rivalry, and, like, there's this weird thing where it's, oh, they're related, and I don't know.
I also think, like, if they have a good relationship as siblings, that also, like, takes a dagger to my heart, because it's the same thing with them. Best friends who end up in a love triangle, I'm like, I hate this.
Aww.
It makes me angry and sad.
I can be okay with like best friends ending up in a love triangle, like both of them like the same person, and it's sort of like, oh, that can be rough. Like, it kind of all hinges on like how awful do they get to each other, and how do they usually they repair the relationship in the end, and like just like how well is that done.
Yeah,
have space for it if they're like actually trying to be good people and they don't like ever,
yeah,
don't ever like really, really hurt each other,
right? But so many of them do, and it just,
yeah, I hate it. There's one sibling love triangle that I understand, and this movie is terrible for so many reasons. But the kissing booth,
oh gosh,
the girl, like her best, she's like has her male best friend and like he loves her, and then she meets her best friend's older brother who's hot and a bad boy, and like the movie is problematic, but the triangle makes sense to me.
That makes sense. That does make sense.
Yeah, that does.
Okay, so I started touching on this, but like something interesting about love triangles as a trope is it transcends genre. Mm-hmm. Like obviously it's going to appear a lot in romance, but it can also be found in fantasy, horror, lit fic, mystery. Like the jealous mistress is a great scapegoat. So what are some of the differences in love triangles when it's not the main storyline? Mm-hmm. As a reader, does it add to or detract from a story? And like as a writer, what are some of the difficulties involved in balancing it?
My first question would be like, why is it there? Like, it's usually some kind of obstacle. And the question is, does that obstacle serve the story that's being told? Or does it just give us more like runaround complications?
Mm-hmm.
That feels like a very abstract answer, but like I think that's like still the answer. Like,
yeah,
I think a lot of times, especially if it's a male protagonist, your love triangle is there to like show him growing as a character and like choosing between things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if it's the centerpiece of the story, if like the whole purpose is it's a romance novel or like movie or whatever, and it's a love triangle, there obviously is more room there to do things in like a wrong way. Like if you're trying to extend it out, there are easy things that you can fall back on that are harmful or that don't look great for the character because like it's your focus. If it's like a side subplot or whatever, that also can be tricky because then since you're not focusing on it, I guess it depends on like how often you see these characters. Like, are they part of the ensemble? Is it like two characters that you deeply know and one character that is like a side character and shows up every so often, and then you fall into those troubles? But yeah, I think it just depends on the story. I know that's a cop out, but like there's so many things that can go wrong and so many things that can go right too, because if it is kind of like your main plot, that can be interesting. It's looking more at internal conflict and that's intriguing and all of that. And there are many different ways that you can do a love triangle. And then the great thing about it being a subplot in like, let's say fantasy or a thriller, that'd be weird. Or like something like that. It's like an added, like it spices up the narrative and like, yes, they're already doing something else, but then they already have this side thing that they have to worry about and save the world or whatever. And, you know, that could be fun too.
Yeah. Or like, horror, thriller, mystery, like usually something about the love triangle is like a secret. So like that adds reasons for your characters to be secretive or suspicious or like sometimes even violent, basically, because they want to keep their secrets and things like that. And so that's a good way to add like tension and drama. And like sometimes you do want to like mystery in particular, you're trying to like have lots of other things going on to obscure like the solving the mystery. So like it can work there. I think it like it could also get in the way if it's like, I don't know, too obvious or like too unrelated, I guess, to like the rest of what's going on, like, because that's like always a danger. In other things, like kind of like we've said before, where it's like the relationship can be like symbolic, I think that works really well in like fantasy and like I'm thinking of like Hunger Games, like dystopian. It's like they tried to make, oh, PETA or Gale like a big thing, and it's sort of like, no, that's not how that works. It's like, yeah, she's with PETA at the end because they bonded over like their like shared experience, but it's also like choosing peace instead of like, I think part of the thing with Gale was that he was basically in like for like enacting like war and things like back on the people who did it to them. And it's like symbolic of like breaking that cycle or like choosing like this other, like which option you choose. So it worked as a story and also symbolically. So I think that's really good. And I think it works really well that way frequently in like fantasy or like sci-fi or however you categorize like dystopian or whatever.
Yeah, agreed. I think a lot of the thing with love triangles with subplot is how much screen time you have available, basically. Because like if you have a fantasy and you spend half of it on a love triangle, then it's going to be some really wonky pacing. A Court of Thorns and Roses is a romance book that spends half of its time on a fantasy plot, which is weird. Like, you could have taken it either direction, and they just kind of stayed right in the middle.
Yeah, so, I think it depends on, like, what function they're serving. Like, if you want to have, like, a love triangle in those areas, then it's like, I mean, talking about Hunger Games again, but it's like, okay, there is like basically a whole plot thing where it's like Katniss and Peeta are like, maybe they actually have feelings for each other, but they're like very much pretending to have strong feelings for each other because it like helps with the plot. Like,
yeah.
So it like, it fits in really nicely. It's not like, oh, we have to divide our time between like the romance and the plot. It's like they're basically the same thing. They're like right there.
Yes, agreed. Everything has to be like moving forward somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Which that kind of brings me to the next question, which is, are love triangles better stretched out over a series of multiple seasons of a show or like multiple books? Or is it better like in a standalone book or like standalone movie?
I get very frustrated when things are drawn out longer than they need to be. So, like, like you were saying, there has to be, like, forward motion. As long as relevant development is happening, I'm okay with it. If it feels like the story is still progressing. But there are some points where, like, even though time is passing, you feel like you're still in the same moment, like, like, the tension needs to build and release. If it's drawn out too long, I just get fed up. Like, much like we said with our, snowed in episode, where it's like, if I get bored, it's too much. Like,
Yeah. But then again, like, I feel like if I'm watching a movie and they're rushing this relationship along, like, if there's not enough room to develop the characters and the relationships, then that also, maybe somewhere in between, or like Ray was saying, like you all were saying, yeah, as long as it's moving the story forward and there's enough room for that particular story, then great. Mm-hmm. Please don't go, you know, 10 seasons just to make money instead of like the five that it should have been, please. And that'd be great.
Ooh, to your point about things moving too quickly, though, like, it is super frustrating when it's like, this was a movie, and then these characters are together at the end for because they happen to be, like, a male and a female character, and we just put people together at the end of movies. Like, that's really annoying. It's like, why?
I will say, like, I think it's harder to do a love triangle in a single book or single movie.
Ooh.
Because you need that space, especially if you have other things going on. Like, you need that space to develop the relationship. Otherwise, you end up with the just, like, love at first sight, or, like, the it's a weird, oh, they're together now. Okay, what happened to the other guy? We don't know. Like, if your love triangle is the point, then yes, you can do it in one movie. Like, Pride and Prejudice, great, yes. But if you have any other kind of plot going on, I think it needs to be stretched out more, because if you try to shove it all in one thing, it's gonna be, like, it's gonna be weird pacing, and it's gonna feel rushed, and
It's like you can't fully, like, explore, I'm going to say both, because we're talking mainly about two options, but it's like, if there are even more, then you need even more time to, like, really show, like, all of the relevant, like, developments about, like, who these people are and how they feel about each other and, like, what they would be like as a couple and what they would be like if they weren't a couple, like.
So, how do you guys feel, and maybe this doesn't technically count as love triangle, but, like, how do you feel about those stories where it's love triangle, and there's like the main person, and they have to choose between two characters, and one of them is for duty, one of them is for love. Mm. Kind of like, maybe this one doesn't count, but like The Princess Bride, where it's I need to marry this guy because if not, my true love will die, or so she believes in choosing that.
I hate those. It's a personal preference, not like anything about the trope itself. I hate them because like the for duty always seems like such a weak, forced option to me. Like, I don't think you run into that much in real life. Like, maybe you used to, but definitely not as much anymore. Like, you might have the, like, more stable option or the more fun option. Like, that's a thing. But, like, I need to marry him for my kingdom, my country, my whatever. Like, that's just, it feels so forced to me. And I'm like, you know what? Why are we doing this?
I believe those in, like, Game of Thrones kind of stories, because they made that a real situation. Like, it's not like your YA, like, oh, I'm not going to marry who my parents told me to. Like, I'm going to go, like, on my own and marry for love or something like that. Because, like, in the Game of Thrones world, that's Sansa. And that, like, gets you in trouble. Like,
yeah, there are real stakes. Like, in Game of Thrones, you choose wrong, you die.
Yeah.
In a YA novel, you choose wrong, your parents will eventually come around and love the person you found them. Love for love's sake.
I mean, I guess I was thinking more of, like, those medieval fantasy or, like, Regency romances. Like, historical romances where, even though, like, we don't experience that much in the modern Western world, I guess, or like at least I feel like we don't encounter that as much. I do think like back then it was like, oh, well, obviously I need to marry this guy, even though I don't love him, because he will provide for me and I will be safe. And as a woman, I don't have many choices versus like, oh, this guy who is a thief and he's so unstable. He might get arrested, but he's hot. And
like, you can argue that, like, Pride and Prejudice again, you can argue that Lizzie is being very irresponsible when she turns Mr. Collins down. Because if she doesn't have another suitor, she's dependent on her parents. And they know that, like, when their father dies, like, they have no right to, like, live in that house. Like, Mr. Collins can kick them out if he wants to. Whereas if Lizzie married Mr. Collins and, like, you could argue that, like, if she did that and, like, then eventually her father dies or something like that, Lizzie could easily, like, maybe not easily, but could have more of a hand in convincing, like, Mr. Collins to, like, let the last, like, her last unmarried sisters and her mother, like, stay and live in the house that they were already living in or something like that. Like, but no, she turns him down and basically, like, fully alienates him, so that is, like, not an option at all. Like, he has no reason to, like, help them. He has no reason to help them at all. And, like, I mean, we're over here looking at it, like, a modern perspective. Also, we know that, like, Mr. Darcy is going to come through in the end. Like, we know that that's going to happen. But at the time, like, like, Lizzie is actually making a very irresponsible decision there.
Yeah. So I can get behind this in, like, the medieval fantasy, because, like I said, real stakes, like, and also it's not the main thing. I realize this is a very me problem, but, like, I don't like the Regency romance ones where it's, like, duty or love, because it makes me compromise my morals.
Oh no.
Because, like, I recently watched the movie Lady Chatterley's Lover, and, like, of course I was rooting for, like, the hot guy and the girl, like, the girl to be happy with the hot, like, well, I don't even remember what he was, gamekeeper, whatever, though she was married, because he was hot and he was interesting and her husband was a dick. Like, but, like, she was married, so, you know, duty says she should stay with her husband. And so those movies make me uncomfortable because I want to be more, I want them to be morally better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This pointing out like the flaws here. Like, but what if? Oh my gosh. Yeah, I see how that would be. That I see how that's like really frustrating as a story. Yeah. I don't think I have as much of a problem with it, but like.
Yes, I am Enneagram 1. Nice to meet you. Like, yeah, that bothers. And like I said, I still think the 4 duty, even if it's a like Regency piece, it bothers me because we're telling it in the modern time, so why are we telling this story?
That makes sense. It makes it like less Escape. Relatable, and of course we're going to root for, like, you know, the character that, like, for love, not for duty, because we don't usually have those that clash. Like, we generally marry for love. Like, there's no reason, there's not a whole lot of reason for us to not to do that.
Yeah. But isn't it kind of like fantasy, like world building? It's like there's a set of rules within Regency romance, just in general. Like, it's so popular.
Stupid rules. Like, yeah, yes, the same principles apply. Like, why does this matter? Why should we care? Mm-hmm. And so, like, if fantasy doesn't answer those well, like, I don't like those either.
Well, I think, like, for some people, though, it's like they're fascinated with the time period. And so, like, they're in the know. They know kind of like the restrictions put on those people. They want to see those play out, just like the restrictions that are placed on us now. I mean, there are certain modern things that are dumb, but are definitely something that we as human beings struggle with in relationships. So, like, looking at a different time period for some people, I think they get a kick out of it because they're like, oh, well, how are they going to get to know each other if they cannot be in each other's presence without, you know, a chaperone with them? Oh, I don't know.
Like, I understand, like, for world building and stuff, you can build a different world. I think more of what we were getting at before is, like, those, like, while those situations can be interesting, they don't relate as much to, like, our lives today.
Neither, like, does fantasy. Like, I don't know any dragons or wizards,
though.
There's, like, meta, like, relations, though. Like, the ones with dragons or whatever are, like, are you going to face the hard problem? Or, like, are you going to tame the hard problem? Like, but, that, like, is a dragon.
Game of Thrones still, like, their rules of relationships and whatnot are very different from our modern concepts of, so
Game of Thrones wasn't written to be relatable. Like, you're not supposed to be like, oh, I see myself in this love story.
But historical romances, there is a piece of, like, escape and, like, being submersed in that world.
Maybe my other problem with that is you don't see this in all of them, but you see it in a lot of them, is you end up with a lot of, like, inaccuracies because, like, they want to tell, like one of the things I hate about Bridgerton is they chose this, like, period time setting for God knows what reason. And then they, like, have the characters, like, sneaking off and fucking each other. And you're like, it's a weird, it doesn't mesh well. And I get what they were going for, and clearly it's popular and, like, it works to some degree, but it bothers me because why choose that setting if you're gonna tell a modern story? Like, they did that with Persuasion too, the new Netflix adaptation of Persuasion. They, like, made it super modern but still decided to keep it in the period setting, and it was weird and didn't work.
Like, they're keeping sets of rules that, like, don't make sense or don't really mean anything. Like, if it's actually, like, in, I don't, historical times, like, it was important who, like, you slept with and didn't sleep with because you didn't have birth control, you didn't have modern medicine or, like, anything like that. So, like, if you got sick or pregnant, that could be a real problem. Meanwhile, like, they're usually not playing with those plot lines in the ones where it's just sort of like, oh, we wanted, like, the aesthetic of the historical times, and we wanted, like, some of the rules for, like, basically plot complications. But beyond that, everyone just acts like modern people. It's like, that doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
Because it points at the rules are there for like no reason other than like plot contrivance.
Exactly. Like, we wanted some of the rules, but not all of them. And that doesn't work for me.
Yeah, but that's not all historical romances. No. Like, Bridgerton is an exception.
Yeah, even the ones that are more like faithful, I guess, still have that kind of like, these characters have modern attitudes, they just happen to be in this time period.
But at the same time, I could also understand that, because going back to your point of like, you know, how are people going to relate to this story? It's probably their attempt to do that. And it reminds me of like fantasy stories in general, because like, why are people intrigued in fantasy stories? Oh, well, it's like a way to escape. And same thing with historical, it just doesn't have magic.
Yeah. So like, it can be choosing like different aesthetics and things like that. Like, I could say, like, what if instead someone did like something that is for all intents and purposes like a modern or a futuristic time, but for whatever reason, like all of like the fashion and the style choices are like Regency English. Like, you could have something like that, and it might be like more relatable in some ways. You'd have to do different things to try and come up with a plot, because it'd be more like what our modern plots are.
Yeah, I think, like you were saying, right, it comes down to the point of the story. Like, a lot of the Regency ones, like, the point of the story is the romance. So you have to be focused on those social rules, what works, what doesn't.
Yeah.
And that gets a little sticky. Whereas if you have a fantasy, like, you can make up the rules. No one knows what the rules should be. So like, whatever you say goes. And like,
for sure.
Even if you choose to focus on the romance in that, then like, it works. But it's just what the point of the story is and how you're building the world, I think.
I guess it depends on if it's like an alt history or not. Like, historical romance, historical fiction is one of those very scary things to me. Like, if I was creating a world and I was writing from a historical perspective, there's always going to be something that someone is going to miss. Like, you can study for years and there's still going to be something that a reader's going to be like, that's not how it was back then. Like, you got that wrong.
Yeah.
But like, I think the reason why I'm more forgiving with those kinds of things is maybe because I don't even know all of the rules. So like, when I read them, I know like the basic, oh, well, you know, you can't do this and this. That's basically what they follow. And I know that's not acceptable for everyone, because obviously there might be some historical buffs that are like, oh, well, I can't read this if it's, you know, it must be at least 85% accurate. And that's definitely, I'm sure there are people out there, writers out there, who are able to accomplish that. But for the average reader, like, maybe all they need to know is the rules for that world.
Yeah.
And then, as long as you don't break them, I don't know. I feel like I wouldn't have a problem.
Like, I'm a lot closer to that. Like, I'm a lot more, like, I'm not as hung up on accuracy so much as function. Like, there are so many, like, oh boy, there are like YA stories that like are set in a fantasy world, and like the fantasy world is like, I'm talking like female YA protagonist, and the fantasy world is sexist. Like, because we decided to make it sexist, which, okay, fair. Like, history has been like that for a long time. And like, I think there are a lot of reasons why like that's been like the case. But like, frequently, like, they're told in like kind of a modern way. So it's like, you can have like your like YA feminist like protagonist just like breaking down boundaries like left and right, and being like not like other girls, or like, you know, whatever else. And there's like no reason that she shouldn't be able to do that. Like, it just, she can just do that, and it's like lauded, and it's like she gets to be special without consequences, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
without facing like any of the, like the problems that like would come with that. Like it's similar with, it's like, oh, well, this fantasy place has like this backward tradition or something like that. It's like sometimes like traditions are in place for a reason and you can't just stomp on them. And like, even if they were like arbitrary, there are probably like people who have been following them. So you can't simply say, what if we didn't do that and expect everyone to like just follow it and for it to like not come back to bite you. Like,
yes. Yeah, those stories are always selectively sexist too. Like there are like three things that are very important and then like the author just doesn't think about how those ripple out, and so like otherwise it'll be a fairly normal society and then there will just be three very sexist rules. Like
yes.
Yeah, that is a very similar problem to what I have with the Regency or period pieces. It's just like there are these very specific rules, but the rest of them don't matter. And it's not even that I know them, like I am not a history buff. It's just that it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't track
whole story.
Uh-huh.
That's so interesting because like I'm able to suspend my disbelief for those kinds of things. It's like very similar to how I do with fantasy, and I'm like just along for the ride because I've read historical romance before and I actually like those better than contemporary. So yeah, I don't know. And like, because I think it has something to do with me and like my love for speculative fiction almost.
That makes
because
sense.
Yeah, like it's like, oh, it's something different and new. It's not our world almost, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I like imagining things that are different. Basically it tends to be more interesting because there are more basically like things to look at or something like that. I live in like our regular world, and I suppose that makes like contemporary modern, like I don't know, contemporary stories more relatable, I guess, because like you already know how it works, like how their world works largely. But that's part of like the draw of things that are like fantasy or historical, is this world is different, it works differently.
Yes, agreed. I think it just always comes down to why are you telling this story in this setting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, love triangles, to trope or not to trope.
Yeah, sure. Like this one's, I don't know, but like it's good when it's done well, and sometimes it's still fun when it's not done so well. Like it can still be fun.
Yeah, it's definitely popular for a reason. When it's done well, at least for me, like it has to be done very specifically, apparently. I don't know. It's fine. Like it's interesting. It creates lots of complications and everything, but there are definitely some things more personally that irk me. And then also like more like, oh, this is probably a problem for the narrative because it's, you know, it doesn't work for the characters, or it's like not showing the characters in the best light, and like they're doing things that they wouldn't normally do because it's the same thing. Like that, you know, the bad side of love triangles, but there are tropes can be done poorly or well, you know, no matter what trope they are. But I think my problem right now is when you have a book or a TV show or a movie that says like, oh, this is going to have a love triangle, there are definitely people out there, like a huge chunk of them, that automatically assume that they will not like them, which is like interesting to me. And obviously there are people out there who love triangles, but maybe it's because this trope is used time and time again, because again, going back to it can be done so many different ways. Yeah, I still think that you can definitely, you can trope, though.
Yes, I say trope, always trope. I love this. I love this trope. Even if it's done badly, it entertains me. And of course, any other advice for writing a love triangle well? I will kick us off with write real characters.
Ooh. Oh my gosh, yeah.
I'm going to continue with, like, the characters serve the story. I think sometimes it's easy to get hung up on an idea that all the characters have to be cool or sexy. And mm-hmm. that isn't always the route to the most engaging story. I mean, you could have your story where the point is to showcase sexy, interesting men. You like that, I suppose you could do that, but like that's usually not going to make a good story that makes like wish fulfillment, which tend to be slightly different things.
Yeah.
Shallower.
Oh. Yeah. Also, like when you're coming up with your love interests, like also treat them like characters and not like going off of what Ray just said. Do not treat them just as like, oh, this is, you know, this archetype and this is that, like in character archetypes, mind you. Like this is like the hot guy and like the hot bad boy guy, and then this is like soft childhood friends. Like don't just stop there. Like actually ask, how is the main character going to be intrigued by both of these people? Like why? What's going on? What's the conflict? What's going to come out of that?
Why does she even like them?
Exactly. Yes. That isn't answered enough.
I will say that it's okay to start with the two attractive men and like pick whatever types you want to use and then create a main character who like has those two specific weaknesses, you know?
Ooh, that's okay.
Like you can do that because let's face it, the hot guys are the interesting part of a romance featuring a love triangle.
Yes. Just please answer the question, but why is she attracted to both of them?
And why are they attracted to her?
Oh,
yes.
That we need that too. Like, she is clumsy and a female is not enough.
She has to be hot. That's sometimes enough for at least the initial interest. Yeah.
Okay, like, maybe. But like, you need more reason for them to stick around.
You do. But like, that gets you started.
That's fair. And that's our episode. So listeners, what do you think? Do you love love triangles? Hate them? Do you have a favorite love triangle subtrope that you want us to cover, or a question about writing love triangles that we didn't talk about? Email us at totroperenottotrope@gmail.com or connect with us on social media at @TheLitNerds and let us know. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another trope. Thanks for listening to Trope or Not to Trope, and happy writing.